What's up, everyone? It's Michael Scotto, senior NBA insider for HoopsHype.com and the host of the HoopsHype podcast. It's been a tough season for the Golden State Warriors so far, which is including the sudden passing of assistant coach Deki Milojevic, and you've got Draymond Green's indefinite suspension earlier in the season. And this team right now is hovering close to 500 as of this recording. And now with the trade deadline rapidly approaching, the Warriors are a team looking to make upgrades, and they have the expiring contract, essentially, of Chris Paul they can dangle. You've got Andrew Wiggins, and you got a rising young talent in Jonathan Kuminga as well. So with that in mind, I'm joined by my former colleague, who I consider one of the best beat writers in the entire business, Anthony Slater. He covers the Golden State Warriors for The Athletic. We're going to break down what's ahead for Golden State with the trade deadline. We'll talk about the game, the return after Coach Deki's passing, and a lot more. Anthony, I appreciate you joining me in a busy time of the year, brother. How's everything going your way?
It's good. You know, it's been a dramatic season in so many ways, as the outside world, I'm sure, knows. But, you know, it's halfway through. Actually, their last game was the halfway mark. And it feels like it's been about four seasons packed into one, really.
That's a well-said analogy for sure, given the way their season has gone. You were there for the return after Coach Deki's passing. And I'm curious for you, being around the team especially, did you have any stories or interactions with him that, you know, maybe were near and dear to you during your time with him?
Yeah, I mean, nothing, you know, special and touching where it was like deeply personal or anything like that. But we talked basketball plenty. You know, he was very inviting with just his personality. I mean, people have talked about it, and anybody who's seen the clips or visions of him over the last week or so, he's always kind of got that huge, you know, teddy bear laugh going. Every single like Eastern European player in the league would come over to chat with him pregame, you know, when they saw him. And you know, he was just always out there available to chat if you wanted to. And I would, you know, more than a handful of times over the last few years, I just go, and usually I would just talk to him about big men. He's kind of an expert in you know, the big man position and the skills and the tools, because he was one back in his day. You know, I mean, everybody knows him mostly for working with Jokic, but I'd say if I want to pinpoint a memory with him, you know, he worked a lot with James Wiseman in his, you know, Wiseman's last season and a half with the Warriors. And the hope was that he could really tutor and mold Wiseman into the star that the Warriors at the time thought he could be. It was tough for him, for Dejan, to work, because, you know, James missed that full first season with Dejan recovering from the meniscus. But I remember Wiseman's knee had got to a point where they cleared him to go play in a G League game. And it was his first game. It was like, you know, it must have been March or something like that. Warriors were on a road trip, and you know, Dejan, he's an assistant coach, so he's on the road trip. Obviously, he goes off the road trip, goes to Stockton, California. I go to Stockton because this was a big deal at the time for the Warriors. Like, you know, Wiseman's, you know, coming back to basketball action after about a year. And I remember sitting with Deki for chunks of that game as he was sitting there watching, you know, this young center he was trying to, you know, pull up and tutor. And I'm watching it with a very, you know, critical eye, you might want to say. The whole world is, right? You're like, can this young center, you know, become what the Warriors want him to become? And he was really good for me that night on the perspective of like, look, he's just happy James is playing. Let's worry about the human and, you know, all he's gone through in this rehab, this tricky rehab where his knee kept re-swelling back up. And actually after this G League stint, it swelled back up again and he was shut down for the season. But I just remember the human element to the way he was coaching James. And he wasn't sitting there being like, why is that screen angle not right? And like, he had those lessons awaiting James. But it was also like, look, he's a human. And I think when you talk to people in the aftermath, he was very good at that touch of like, you know, let's enjoy our lives and let's all like kind of have perspective on everything. And I think his death has delivered a lot of perspective to, you know, the Warriors in a trying season, that while it is not going well, not going how they thought it would, you know, there's a lot bigger things, you know, in life at times to concern yourself with.
You touched about Dejan, you know, with his humanity towards other people and players. Certainly the relationship aspect, I think, sticks out most with him when you see what other people have said around the league.
And as you know, we're in a relation, an industry that's based on relationships and strong ones at that. How some people witness this for the Warriors, obviously.
A lot of people.
And, yeah. You know, that's a traumatic event. I mean, do you have any sense like how this has been affecting those who witnessed it and just the Warriors organization in general?
I think everybody a little bit differently. And it, like, you know, they've said like they could not have played those two games that were postponed. Like, I'm curious if the league came back and was like, look, we can't postpone. Like, I don't know if they forfeit or what, but they were just like saying they just were not ready. The coaching staff's been hit hard. Some staffers have been hit hard. There's about five players at this team dinner that you're talking about where this heart attack took place. It's the scene that's been described to me is pretty, you know, like you said, traumatizing. And I think that, you know, there was a lightness yesterday. You know, you're going out to pregame, they're still like laughing and joking around, but you can tell like it is a franchise. It was a more subdued version of a normal NBA game in a normal NBA environment. And it's hitting people heavy. And I would say, like, you know, mostly everybody, especially an adult, like, you know, somebody in your life who's died, like, you've gone through grief. But I do think what was different, and you mentioned it was like seeing it happen, like, that is rare. I would say, like, most adults have not, like, seen something like that, you know, in person. And I think a lot of the people that were at that dinner, and like you mentioned, it was a lot of the organization, that's the first time they've seen something like that, especially to somebody they know so well.
I could certainly understand that. I remember, you know, when my own dad passed, how that affected me. And when you see something like that, it sticks with you, no question. But as far as this team looking ahead now, we're now 2 weeks away from the trade deadline. And there's always a lot of chatter about these guys lately, given their up and down season. And I guess the first guy I'll touch with you on is Jonathan Kuminga. You know, by all accounts, from what I've heard, the Warriors are pleased with the growth of Jonathan Kuminga this season, and they're reluctant to trade him, at least I'm told. And it would take theoretically, it would take a package involving an all-star player or an overpay of draft picks for Golden State to even consider trading him. And, you know, some wondered if Kuminga would be a trade candidate with the Raptors and Pascal Siakam talks. The Warriors and Raptors, they did have talks regarding Siakam, but nothing ever got close. And from what I heard, Toronto wasn't as high on Kuminga as some assumed. So, Anthony, you being there, we saw he had a perfect shooting night the other night, and he's gotten better. But we also saw the Shams report about him having a little bit of a question with Steve Kerr about, you know, maximizing his potential and whatnot. So when you look at the totality of Jonathan Kuminga this year, where is he at both in his development and role with the team, what it could be going forward? And is this guy a candidate to be traded, in your opinion? Because a lot of teams around the league certainly covet him for the Warriors.
Yeah, so as far as how he's playing, like, he's improved massively. You know, he's in the best stretch of his career by far. I believe he's up to like 21 or 22 straight games of double digits scoring, four straight 20-point games, which is the longest streak of his career. All of those have come off the bench. You mentioned the 11 of 11 night. He's committed more to just like more downhill attacking, trying to really put pressure on teams at the rim, going less to his jumper. They still tell him, hey, you know, if the right moment comes around, take the three, take the mid-ranger. But, like, you know, where you will really impact this league is, you know, Steve Kerr's used the Sean Marion comparison before, like, you know, when Steve was in Phoenix as a GM there. The way Marion just impacted the game in all those subtle slashing type ways. And he thinks Kuminga could be that type of player. And he is emerging at a time that, a decision on his future and Andrew Wiggins' future, which we'll get to, like, it does need to kind of be made in the next couple of weeks. And I do get the sense that organizationally, as you mentioned, they're very hesitant to put him in a trade package. Even though, like, part of the reason is because his value league-wide hadn't been what the Warriors still view him to be, although I do think his value is rising because of how well he's playing. But, you know, I think he's, as long as, to me, it's as simple as like, as long as he feels like he's like a 25 to 30 minute per night player every night, he's completely fine, you know, with the Warriors. And you know, after the report we put out, you know, about Steve Kerr, they had him and Kerr had a long meeting in their office, and he kind of, you know, said in the aftermath, everything was fine. The next game, he played a career high in minutes, and he, you know, he has been getting steadier, fuller, you know, every night, you know, 20, like I said, 25 to 30 minutes. So he seems very ready for that. The problem they've been having is the lineup combinations that include him and Andrew Wiggins just have not worked. The numbers are really bad. They know that. They've been hesitant to play those two together. So at times, Kuminga's minutes have been really limited, because if Wiggins is having a good night, or they're deciding they just want to go more with Wiggins, you know, his minutes have been suppressed, and that had been frustrating him. And that goes back to the playoffs last year, where Wiggins comes back from his absence, goes back in the starting lineup, and Kuminga goes from a heavy rotation police piece to basically out of the rotation in the playoffs. So I think Wiggins' future, and maybe that's decided in the next couple of weeks, could impact Kuminga's. But I, having the same sense you do, that they're not, you know, scouring to see what Kuminga's market is right now. I mean, they view him as still part of their future.
And you touched on Andrew Wiggins. Rival executives and Bobby Marks, who previously joined me on the Hoopside podcast, also agreed that Andrew Wiggins is a trade candidate that they're monitoring with the Warriors, and you touched on it as well. You know, I tried to brainstorm a little bit who could make sense. I had heard that Dallas liked him. They're certainly
that's looking, another name that I've, you know, heard in that market.
Yeah, Dallas has always liked him, and they're looking to upgrade it to three. This is just me, my opinion. You know, Houston's looking for a starting caliber upgrade, and they've got expiring contracts that can get them to Wiggins' number if they wanted to, if they find him an attractive target. But you being there day to day, I was curious, have you heard any teams specifically that have real interest in trading for Andrew Wiggins at this time on essentially what some could view as a buy low guy who's having a bit of a down year thus far?
Well, I'd start by saying, like, everyone, pretty much every team in this league, in theory, could use what Andrew Wiggins could be, what Andrew Wiggins was in 2022 during that playoff run, right? A 3-and-D wing. He's hitting 40% of his threes, and he was one of the better wing defenders during that playoff run. He guarded Jason Tatum. He guarded Luka Doncic. He was great. And then they got him back that summer on a 4-year extension, where this is year one of the extension, with, you know, I think it's somewhere around 24, 25 million this year. Like, that was viewed at the time as like, wow, what a bargain deal, team friendly. Obviously the way the last two seasons have gone, and particularly this season, where he's having the worst offensive year of his career, all the lineup numbers and on court data, it's been terrible for him, have tanked his value. So it would be kind of a sell low time for the Warriors. As far as teams, I mean, you mentioned it, like I those Dallas rumblings have been out there. But, you know, I think a lot of teams could convince themselves, as you mentioned, like, you know, into a buy low situation. But, you know, what do the Warriors want is the big question. And, you know, maybe it is just getting off his future money. And you can get him on the cheap, because the second apron really matters here, and what's looming for the Warriors, and how they have to potentially rearrange the deck chairs, and the fact that he makes big money for the next three seasons. If they can get off that for some expirings, maybe that is appealing enough, you know, for them to even maybe have to attach a small asset. And if they do decide they want Kuminga here long term, Kuminga's extension eligible this summer. So that is, that's kind of the pivot point. Those two, Kuminga, Wiggins, and the fact that, you know, they're the two wings on the team that don't seem to be able to play together that well, and one seems to be declining, one is ascending. It indicates to me where this thing might be heading.
You know, I got to tell you, Anthony, a lot of rival executive scouts, you name it, anybody that's keeping an eye on the Warriors around the league, they have two questions that I always seem to get from them. One, what happened to him this year? Why is he struggling? And two, is it like it got to do with, you know, stuff going on behind the scenes with him, personal stuff, like, I guess it's really more the same stuff, but a subcategory. What do you say to that? Why is he having a down year this year? And are there external factors at play here that are potentially either the root or part of it?
Yeah. I mean, I think the fact that he just, like, you know, was away for a few months late last season, impacted his rhythm. I mean, he came back and played in the playoffs and tried to get through it. And he was actually okay during that playoff run, but, he just hadn't played that much basketball for a long period of time. And then people often forget this, but game five against the Lakers, he broke his ribs. Like, he had like a 6 to 8 week injury. It was basically going to be 2 month recovery. Now, he put a flak jacket on, played in game six. First play of that game, I can remember LeBron, right? There were reports out there. Everybody knows Andrew Wiggins like is gutting through this broken rib issue, and LeBron just power posts into him. And I remember sitting there very close in Staples where we sit, and you could see just the grimace in Wiggins' face as he's just getting posted up. And then I remember talking to him leaving the arena that night. They had been eliminated that night, and he was like, yeah, it's like going to be, you know, basically a 2 month recovery. So that really affected his offseason, where he was not able to play that much basketball. He came into camp just completely out of rhythm, and then struggled early in the season. His handle was really loose. The shooting numbers are as bad as they've ever been in his career. Even in the Minnesota days, which at times he gets criticized for, still scoring 18 to 20 a game on like at least decent shooting numbers. That just wasn't there. It snowballed because the team's performance was snowballing, which didn't help. His rebound numbers were down, and that's usually a sign that he's not as engaged as he needs to be. The personal life stuff, I think it always kind of looms over the conversation about him. But, I mean, he's there. He's there every day. He's trying. He's just hasn't been able to generate a rhythm. And then the other thing is, like, they've had to kind of go away from him and limit his minutes because of how poorly he's played and how well some of the young guys have played. Kuminga, Moses Moody, some of those guys, Pajemski, and his season just hasn't been able to get back on track.
Anybody else specifically beside Dallas you see as a team that maybe could make a run at Wiggins?
Yeah, and again, this is speculation, so I don't want it to be like I'm not reporting. I've heard that these type of teams are interested, but like, you know, Charlotte to me, I see they have some expirings. You can, you know, do they want to get in that market? Or Cleveland has always been in desperate need of a three, right? I mean, we all know
the
that.
Irony on that one.
Yeah, yes, very true. Indiana had been, you know, in my mind for that because they'd been kind of looking, but, you know, obviously that's the past, over with the Siakam. So. Yeah,
absolutely. They definitely, which was intriguing to me because they looked at OG Anunoby, they miss on him. They looked at Wiggins, but they were able to get Siakam. I would have went that route too. I know they're figuring it out, but. Yeah, I agree with you. And again, don't worry, I'll make sure it's in the transcript about that it is an opinion. But I know the aggregators love to say whatever they want anyway. Chris,
you know,
Paul, I do know. Trust me, I do. Yeah. We gotta Paul. Keep him in line. But the other guy I thought of as a trade candidate, certainly Chris Paul, around the league, people will look at him and his expiring contract. Now the Warriors view Chris Paul as more than just an expiring contract. They do feel that he's a key part of what they're doing. And in the minutes he's played pretty well for a guy that's 39 now. He's expected to return sometime around the All-Star break. We don't have an exact date yet, but somewhere in that range. So, Anthony, when you look at CP3's situation in Golden State, do you see him being moved at the deadline, given his contract is essentially an expiring contract?
I think it's a possibility. And part of the reason they traded for him was that like maneuverability. They like to use the term optionality. But part of the appeal of his contract also, when they made the move, when they traded Jordan Poole for him, was the fact that it was expiring. And they are moving into this world where, like, you know, are they going to extend Klay Thompson in the summer? How are they going to duck this second apron with all the money they still have owed to others, you know, moving forward? So that part of that decision may depend on if they believe that this year is worth chasing. And if there's a win now move out there that, that can leap them into at least somewhat fringe contention. And there could be an argument made that no, I mean, they're 19-22. They've not been good enough all season to believe that there is some fix-all out there that makes them a title contender. And if not, beyond the fact that, as you mentioned, Chris Paul played pretty well for them. Like, he has value. His contract has value to them as not only an expiring deal, but a deal that this summer also they could, you know, it has a $30 million, you know, non-guaranteed year. So obviously you could just, you know, release that, try to resign him at a lower number, but you also put that into a trade this summer. Not saying they will do that, but I think there's more value than people realize for the Warriors in keeping.
I agree. It definitely gives them more optionality. And, you know, you talk about what they could do with him, and you touched earlier about, you know, avoiding the second apron, and which clearly was, you know, directed towards the Warriors and their team. I think when they did this new CBA.
Warriors and Clippers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But part of that is because they're going to have to figure out what they do with Klay Thompson in the offseason. And, you know, Golden State and Klay Thompson spoke at the beginning of the year. They didn't get a deal done. So both sides felt it was best to push it off until the end of the season. He's been through the free agency process before, and he stayed. The Warriors want him back, and Thompson seems like he wants to be back from what I've heard. So how does this shake out ultimately, in your opinion, Anthony?
Yeah, I mean, I did an interview with him preseason. He was very transparent about wanting to be back and believing, like, you know, he's romantic about this Warriors time and like the legacy, and like he feels that stuff deeply, like deeper than your, I think, average player. Like, he will talk about like what it means to what they've built as the Warriors, and what his legacy being like kind of a one franchise player. Now, he still believes he's a high level, you know, wing that need, you know, shooter, scores, you know, can defend bigger guys, obviously. You know, the defense against smaller guys has fallen off a cliff just because his lateral quickness after the injuries. But, you know, he still thinks he's a high money, you know, player. It should be valued like that. And they obviously didn't come to terms before the season on an extension. They weren't even close. I mean, that's all been reported. But I think they're going to go into the offseason still both motivated to continue the partnership that, you know, will end with his statue outside the arena. Just like they did this past summer, they took Draymond Green into free agency because they couldn't come to terms on an extension. Didn't, you know, the Warriors weren't even that motivated that time around. Draymond had a good season. They found a number that, you know, and a length that satisfied both sides and got it done. And, you know, if you have me predict, until I'm fooled or until I'm proven otherwise, I think they're going to keep Klay Thompson around because of what he means just historically to this franchise. And the number will be dictated by the market. You know, if there are other teams out there willing to bump his number to a level the Warriors previously haven't been willing to go, then maybe they'll go to that number. If there hasn't been, maybe Klay has to bring his ask down. But I do think, again, I would just predict, just because of what both sides, you know, kind of mean to each other, I would think they would get something done.
Was there any sense when they had those talks if it was money related or the length of the contract related?
Kind of both. It didn't get that far down the line from what I gather. You know, it wasn't like they were, you know, at the doorstep and the, you know, well, this year couldn't go here, this money. Yeah. It just kind of seemed like, you know, money and years. Shams even reported that it was money and years, like both really.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't seem close from my side, but certainly wanted to touch with you on that. And
yeah, for sure.
The other guy that got to figure out in the offseason, is the coach, Steve Kerr. I mean, you got to figure out what's going on with him. And it's almost somewhat assumed that he's going to be the coach next year, but is that a fair assumption in your opinion? Like, or couldn't you see this ending in a Bob Myers situation where, you know, maybe it's time for a change? I definitely want to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah. You know, Bob left on his own, like at his own desire to leave, because it, you know, and he even said it in his press, like he was like, there was a burnt out nature to his decision to leave. Steve's not burnt out. Steve wants to keep coaching. We'll see if they get something done. Steve's very private about any negotiations. So like, there's not that much info out there. We'll see. I think some of it depends on what happens the rest of the season, right? There's a big, big difference between them not making the playoffs this season, even though they have a historic, you know, tax bill right now, compared to if they make like a late season push, get into the sixth seed, you know, make some noise in the playoffs. Like the gap on how everything will feel exiting those two type of situations would determine a lot, not just Steve Kerr's future. So I think that, like, you know, again, I think the next few months will matter in that conversation. But Steve wants to be around, and, you know, from all I gather, especially, you know, and this last week or 10 days after the assistant coach passing away has reinforced like what he means to them at so much more than an X's and O's level, the way he's guided them through this. I still sense a desire from, you know, the leadership of the organization to keep Steve in the fold.
Well said. You know, we touched on so much of this dynasty core. Got two more guys that certainly come to mind. I guess I'll start with Draymond Green. Came back from the indefinite suspension. I mean, I could throw a million questions your way about Draymond, but I would say right now, I think I'm always a big picture guy. So I'll ask you this. Where is Draymond Green standing right now with the Warriors, given everything that happened with the indefinite suspension? Because they need him, but they haven't always been able to count on him this year to be in the lineup, given what happened.
You know, he's in the whole, like, you know, reconciliation phase of his return, where it, you know, actions are more than words. He said everything he's needed to say and apologized for what he's needed to, and, you know, done whatever work that the NBA deemed necessary to lift the indefinite suspension. And then, you know, he's admitted, like, you know, he's done, and when asked about like the urgency of the moment and getting back and playing well, he's like, you know, I've done enough harm to this team. I need to get back and play as well as soon as possible. He's come back kind of on this with this unofficial team mandate to, like, don't even screw with referees. Like, forget just the flagrant fouls that the league will suspend you for. Like, don't even bother yourself with the refs. Show us that you're so focused on the team and winning that you, like, if there's a block call that you didn't like you won't just, you know, upend the game because you want to chase down the referee, get a T, maybe even get ejected. And, you know, he's played two games. He's been very good in both games, played well. He's hitting his threes. There was talk post game last night, you know, especially chatting with people, you know, in the locker room, just how good he was as a pick and roll defender on DeJounte Murray in that game and how much they've been missing that. So when he's on the floor and focused and motivated, which he has been for two games, and that I want to highlight that two games, because that's all it's been. And that's that, as they'll say, like, that doesn't earn everything back. But it's just clear how much he matters, you know, to the court product and everything that has happened over the years, which includes the fact that he obviously punched Jordan Poole and spiraled last season. But they still gave him a 4-year extension because how good he can be on the court. You've seen that through two games. And at this point, their path to legitimacy again this season, in my opinion, is much more about Draymond Green being available and playing the way he has than some, you know, like I said, fix-all trade. And we'll see. You know, he's very clearly on thin ice with the league and, I guess, in turn, the Warriors. But he's been on thin ice before and recovered because he's Draymond. So we'll see.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned about them kind of needing him and he's in this reconciliation phase. The guy I always look at, you talk about too, Steve Kerr's leadership and his value is more than an X and O's guy. I don't think any of this works without the calming leadership and ever steady presence of Stephen Curry. I mean, Steph is one of those stars, and there are few of them in the league, you know this, that no matter what's going on up and down, he always seems to have like an even keeled, holistic approach and doesn't overly get involved in the muck of team building, does his job, makes it almost easier for a front office to do what they have to do. Do you have a sense at all? I mean, Steph has played well. We could see that on film and with his numbers, but what do you have a sense of where Steph is just in terms of looking at this team and where it's at competitively, because he still wants to win. He's playing at a high level, but it almost seems like the guys around him haven't matched his level of play yet. Like, what's going through the mind of Steph Curry right now from your vantage point, given this season right now?
Well, I mean, he's been frustrated with the season. There's been obviously frustrations with Draymond, maybe missing over half the season due to suspensions. And he does not like where their record is. He, you know, I think feels a level of career mortality, although he's held off. Like, his prime is extended extremely long, and doesn't look like it's, you know, ending anytime in like the, you know, the very near future. There still is a career mortality when, you know, you're 35 years old. So he wants to compete now. But the truth is, like, you know, he was in on the decisions this summer, the pool for Paul swap and the prioritizing more veterans, getting Dario Saric in here. And, like, you know, they talked preseason, including from him, like how much they love the roster. And that roster that the players love, that the veterans love, that Steph Curry loved, just hasn't performed, you know, and it's been turnover prone. There's been late game meltdowns, which he's been involved in. I can remember one in Sacramento where he had a really bad turnover, and, you know, and his veterans, his guys, bringing Draymond back, you know, Klay Thompson, his, you know, established core that he wants to ride this era out with, has been a lot of the reason for the struggles. Klay had shooting struggles. Draymond Green has had the suspension. Steph, even at times, he was unbelievable early in the year. He had a little shooting slump, and as I mentioned, some late game kind of woes. So it's tough for, like, it's not a situation where he's turning and pointing fingers and, you know, he's ready to ask out or anything like that. I think he's frustrated, but he wants to solve it. And he's trying to solve it before, you know, the clock runs out, really.
No, I could say about his mortality. He was never a guy that does what he does because of athleticism or size. It's all skill, hand-eye coordination. It's fascinating to see, given the way his career trajectory has gone, especially after those ankle injuries early on, and they had the Monte Ellis kind of backcourt with him. You know, I was about to let you go, but then you mentioned Jordan Poole. I got to ask real quick before I get you out of here. Is Golden State looking at what's going on with Washington, Jordan Poole, going, check this out. How do they feel now after that trade? Given, because it Jordan Poole, by all accounts, has not been what Washington thought to this point. I think that's certainly fair to say. I thought this was a guy that could average, you know, close to 25 points a game if he had the ultimate green light, and it just hasn't materialized.
Yeah, I thought he was going to have a better scoring season. But also, I thought there was at least a level of unfair expectations being thrown on him. People were talking about him, like, leading the league in scoring. Kevin Garnett came out and was, like, basically saying he was going to have his James Harden, you know, got traded to Houston type season. So I thought that was overly ambitious, but yeah, I mean, he's struggled. I don't ever sense the Warriors, like, cackling, laughing, haha, look at what's going on with Jordan Poole in Washington. They liked him. And by the way, he was, like, huge for them in that title run, at various moments. And it's weird that it spiraled to this situation, especially once he's gotten the big contract. You know, I'm not around every day. You know, I know Jordan, you know, decently well. But I think part of it is, like, he's on a really bad team, and maybe that brings out bad habits within him and lineup combinations that don't necessarily work. And, you know, maybe a few years from now, he'll come to more of a realization that, like, you know, maybe he fits better as kind of your microwave scoring six men that kind of, when you do have it on certain nights, come in and, you know, try to shoot the lights out. When you don't, maybe your minutes are pulled back. But, you know, he felt ready for a bigger role, a bigger, you know, stamp on an organization. He's getting it in Washington through a half season. It's not going well. He'll have a little bit more time to try to correct that. But even if he doesn't, I do think his scoring skill will have a place in this league for a long time. And we'll just find out over the next several seasons what type of role that is in.
I'll never forget when they won the title and him and Andrew Wiggins are on Instagram Live. And he goes, "We about to get a bag."
They were both correct, by the way. They both got big extensions right after that.
They did. You should get an extension, too, if you don't have a bag already.
Thank you.
You crushed
that. Make that your headline.
My just, man. Like I said at the top in the intro, in my opinion, one of the best beat writers in the business. So I appreciate you taking time out for joining me, brother. It's always good to catch up, and I'm happy for your success on the West Coast. Keep up the great work.
Yes, sir. This is your time of year, trade deadline.
You know it. It's my Super Bowl. I appreciate you, brother. And I also want to thank everybody else for tuning in. If you want to hear more episodes of the Hoops Hype Podcast with guest appearances from NBA players, coaches, executives, and media members such as Anthony Slater, you can like and subscribe to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. You can keep up with my tweets on Twitter at Mike A. Scotto. Make sure you're following Anthony too. He's at Anthony V. Slater. Until next time, I'm your host, Michael Scotto, wishing you and yours all the best.